Welcome to the Applied Policy Podcast, bringing you up-to-date insights on health policy and reimbursement progress that will improve lives by improving care.
I'm Louisa Hart. I'm the host of today's Applied Policy Podcast. We have with us, you are, sir?
I'm Kent McKinney, Associate Professor of Health Policy and Management at the Joseph L. Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University.
And my understanding is that you have a long and distinguished career in healthcare. Tell me a bit about that.
I had over 30 years in healthcare, predominantly in the life sciences industry, in the pharmaceutical industry, and also in managed care. All of those different experiences have helped kind of shape my perspective on access and affordability.
You have some thoughts about how to fix the healthcare system. But before we talk about that, where are we now in terms of patient access and affordability of healthcare?
It's a difficult question when we think about individual patient access and affordability to healthcare and health insurance. So I want to make sure that we draw some parallels here and establish a couple of guardrails. What I'm referring to when I talk about access and affordability is access and affordability to health insurance. So these are patients that have substantive levels of health insurance, not the uninsurable, which that's a very important issue and one for another podcast. So I want to tease apart access and affordability to health insurance versus access and affordability to healthcare. Our research is telling us it's becoming more and more difficult for patients that have health insurance to either, one, continue to afford the health insurance, or two, afford the cost sharing that's associated with health insurance. And so I'll give you an example. Premiums are up over 25%. Over the last 5 years in the aggregate. So 5 years ago, premiums were X, and now they're 25% higher than that. Just a very short period of time, 5 years into the future. And my fear is that if trends continue, then premiums will not be affordable to patients. So that's kind of the premium aspect of this. Cost sharing is also up about the same amount over the last 5 years. And so, again, my fear is that increasing cost sharing is placing health insurance out of reach for everyday Americans. And the Kaiser Family Foundation would back this up. They did some research that looked at and concluded that one in four adults with good health insurance. And Louisa, these are patients that have really, really good employer-sponsored health insurance. One in four adults reported that they did not choose a procedure that was prescribed for them by their physician because they could not afford the cost sharing for that particular procedure. So they went without it. And I think that if this continues, I'm envisioning a public health crisis in the United States if we can't get behind this and try to figure this out and figure it out pretty quickly.
Which will come first? The patients not being able to afford healthcare insurance, or the company is just going out of business saying, we can't do it anymore?
Well, that is a really, really great question. I just want to tease that apart. There's increasing cost pressure, not only in the companies that you're referring to, managed care organizations or companies that are intermediaries that deliver the benefit, but there's also employers that purchase large and vast quantities of health insurance for employees, dependents, and retirees. They too are experiencing pain points associated with increases in domestic healthcare spending, which is driving kind of this whole train of increasing cost sharing out to the patient. So I think in response to your question, these two characteristics, increasing cost sharing to the patients and what that means to the patients, and increasing costs not only to the health plans and to the employer sponsors, move on the same train, if you will. And they impact both in equal amounts. Well, I don't want to be a fear monger and suggest that we're at a point where health insurance plans are just going to close up shop. But what we are seeing is with employer sponsors who are having to absorb increasing healthcare costs for their employees, this is a competitive issue, which makes them non-competitive with foreign, as an example, automakers, when in this country, GM, Chrysler, and Ford have to underwrite significant healthcare increases when And in Japan, you know, a similar situation is not occurring with companies over there.
As long as I can remember, which is a while, people have been working on trying to make healthcare more affordable, but it doesn't ever seem to move in that direction. Why is that?
In the United States, we live in a very fragmented health delivery system, and there is new technology and new innovation coming into the marketplace at a very rapid pace, which is driving up the cost of healthcare domestically in the United States. Innovation in this regard is new pharmaceutical innovation and new medical device innovation, new radiology innovation, things that take better pictures inside the body, better drugs. I'll give you an example. So in regard to drug therapies, there are new treatments out in the marketplace that we're now, as a society, looking at cures for diseases where previously, even 10 years ago, there were drugs out there to treat the condition. Hepatitis C is a great example of that. There are now cures in a pill for hepatitis C. There are new products that are coming into the marketplace that reduce beta amyloid plaque in the brain of Alzheimer's patients. There are therapies and innovations called CAR T therapies, which I won't get too into the weeds on that, but basically in a patient that has cancer, they take T cells out of that patient, modify those T cells, inject them back in to the patient, and those cells, they've now trained those cells to attack the cancer cell. So that is the type of innovation that I'm referring to. And I think as a society, I know as a society, society does better with more innovation, not less innovation. So I am, you know, as much as I want to keep healthcare accessible and affordable to patients, I want to also live in a society where we lead the way around the world. And we do currently, we want to keep that strong. We lead the way in innovation.
You have frontline experience, do you not, with health insurance, not just your personal insurance, but managing healthcare costs? Tell me about that.
Yes, I was the CEO of a managed healthcare plan regulated in the state of Maryland, and it was a very interesting health plan. It was a safety net. We refer to these groupings of plans as safety net health plans because oftentimes, Louisa, these are the last stop along the way for people to get health insurance. The plan that I led was referred to or called the Maryland Health Insurance Plan, or MHIP, and it was a state health insurance plan for Maryland residents that had pre-existing medical conditions. And I'm dating myself here a little bit. So this is pre-Obamacare, which abolished the pre-existing exclusion, condition exclusion. So for patients that had pre-existing conditions, commercial insurance plans would not insure them. Usually they did not insure them in the commercial marketplace. So that left stranded a tremendous number of patients that had pre-existing conditions. I'm grateful for this experience for many, many different reasons. I really learned a tremendous amount about value-based care leading this health plan, simply because my patient population had, on average, four chronic conditions. They were driving a substantial amount of health claims costs. And to make matters kind of more interesting for me and my leadership team, we could only do so much by raising premiums. Our premiums were toggled to commercial rates in the Maryland marketplace. So not only did we have a high-consuming health plan full of sicker patients, we were really constrained with what we could do in collecting more premiums. So I had to do things differently. And I learned how to do things differently around value-based care. I learned a very, very important ratio called the medical loss ratio, which is commonly used in health insurance today and in actuarial science. The medical loss ratio is a very simple ratio. It equals claims costs in the numerator that are being paid out for hospital services, pharmacy services, medical services, radiology services, divided by premium revenue coming into the health plan. Our medical loss ratio was 276%. Meaning that for every dollar that we collected from MHIP members, we were spending $2.76 on claims costs.
So just to put this into layperson's terms, if you had a budget of $100 a month for groceries, this would be that you were spending well upwards of $200 a month. Correct. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. We were spending more going out the door on claims costs than we were bringing into the health plan. So, you know, I sat with my leadership team. I challenged everyone to come up with ideas. We came up with great ideas around how to address that numerator issue. It's because we couldn't really increase premiums in the denominator to address the medical loss ratio. We had to lower the numerator and therefore lower the medical loss ratio by addressing claims costs. The best way that we could do that is avoiding unnecessary medical resource and hospital resource utilization. No one was actively managing that before I took the helm of the health plan. And we really did, a very good job getting into our data and identifying. I'll give you an example, a real world example. Our cost driver for hospital claims was psychosis. These are very, very vulnerable patients. It's not surprising that they were driving costs in the hospitals. What we did was we looked at them and we followed them with claims data from hospital, discharged back out into community. They never met with their outpatient provider. They never filled their prescriptions. And what would happen is they would end up back in the hospital. And there was no management of that cycle. So we wanted to break that cycle in MHIP. So the easy solution that I saw work wonderfully is that we broke this cycle of inpatient, outpatient, inpatient, outpatient by a care navigator that would meet with a patient as they were being discharged from the hospital. And they would navigate a warm handoff or a warm transfer back out into the community. We set a goal for 2 days with a provider from the health plan, a psychiatrist or a mental health provider that could address their issue and establish a friendly face with the patient that had just been discharged. And so by doing that, breaking that chain, we were able to reduce unnecessary hospital utilization by 40%. And there's a significant dollar amount associated with that. So back to our medical loss ratio. If you're trying to manage a numerator issue and lower cost, this is an excellent example of how you can trade cost for better patient value. In many ways, it felt like building the airplane while we were flying the airplane, but that's okay. There's a tremendous body of evidence out there in the literature about the evidence associated with better health outcomes and cost avoidance for patients, as an example, that have a serious mental illness. So at the time, we're going back, you know, 12 years now, there was a lot of good information out there. Since that 12-year period, there's been a lot more information coming out about other ways to think about keeping patients with serious mental illness out of the hospital. So I would encourage anyone who wants to embark on a value-based implementation for a health plan to rely heavily on current evidence that's out there. I'm not a physician, but I got really smart on management approaches to keeping patients out of the hospital.
No offense, but that seems like low-hanging fruit. Is it or not?
Mental health care is low-hanging fruit. The way I look at low-hanging fruit is big return on investment for the amount of effort that's applied. By putting care management together, meeting patients where they were in the hospital, navigating them out, it's relatively low intensity and relatively low cost for a very big return on investment. Not only, and this is, I do want to pull this out, not only return on investment in lowering costs for unnecessary hospitalization, but more importantly, and I think we forget this. The patients, they generally do better when they're treated in an outpatient setting, especially for a patient that has serious mental illness, because the treatment paradigm is to get them on therapy, get them compliant with their medication so that they can ultimately make gains and strides toward being productive again, being employed again, and trying to live a more productive, healthy, normal life.
To have medical loss ratio be a valuable tool, is this always something that is twinned with value-based care? Is that part of the deal?
You know, that's a great question. No, medical loss ratios have can be looked upon as punitive. If you look at the kind of the opposite of what I try to envision for medical loss ratio, I'm a little bit more optimistic in my use of medical loss ratio, but the government requires in certain government insurance programs a certain medical loss ratio, which instills upon the managed care organization that they have to spend at least this amount of money on patient care. I guess there's some fear. I can't understand what's driving this, particularly in light of increasing healthcare costs. I don't know that there's a way that you can spend less than 85 cents, as an example, on a dollar on patient care and call yourself an insurance plan. So in that regard, it is punitive. But now I used medical loss ratio as a management approach to managing patients to better levels of care. The new paradigm in managed care, due to a variety of different reasons, notwithstanding the increases in domestic healthcare spending, which are driving a lot of this, the new paradigm is population health. And this is what I teach at Columbia. I teach my graduate students that it would be impossible to develop management strategies in an insurance marketplace without a good population health data mining exercise. You've got to be able to identify each individual chronic condition, what they're costing you, and identify a management approach that is amenable to each different condition.
What if people have comorbidities? Do you have to tease out which is the more expensive?
A lot of times, let me give you an example. Coronary artery disease could comprise high blood pressure, could comprise a component of diabetes and other cardiovascular related issues. I like to look at these as opportunities to scale whatever management approach that you have across all three conditions. And I think that even though it's a little bit more complicated to approach each individual condition, because they run, in this case, in a triad like that, it's easier to scale your management activities across all of those three different areas.
How optimistic are you that we can get our healthcare costs under control?
I'm very optimistic about that. I've seen it firsthand. I've experienced it. I've driven it. I've implemented it. I've not only envisioned it and identified areas for management strategies in a health plan, I implemented that with my team. And we were just one small health plan. Can you imagine the types of cost savings that similar activities would create across the whole healthcare system in the United States? I'm the internal optimist here. I think we need to get involved with these types of value-based programs, value-based initiatives, so that we can, one, address rising healthcare costs in the health plan, two, improve patient outcomes, and three, keep innovation high in the marketplace by the manufacturers.
So to sum up here, medical loss ratio is not an end in itself. It is a tool that you recommend using to get the balance back in terms of costs and premiums. Is that right?
That's exactly right. It is a simple equation, but it's such a powerful equation. And it helps me to describe the central problem, and that is claims cost. If we want to keep healthcare affordable and accessible, we can't address a medical loss ratio by increasing the denominator or the premiums. We have to look at trading out a unit of cost in the numerator with a unit of value. So that is, I think, the future of lowering and moderating runaway healthcare costs in our healthcare system.
Thank you so much for being with us today and explaining in very understandable terms the value of this very complex approach.
It's great to be here, Louisa. Thank you for hosting me today. Access and affordability for patients is probably the biggest issue, I think, that as a society we need to focus on. And it's great to have an opportunity to connect with you on these issues. Thank you.
For the latest developments in health policy and reimbursement issues, please go to our website at appliedpolicy.com. Thank you for listening.